Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money
at Menards. Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You're listening to the Jay Bird Watching Podcast, the official podcast of jaysjournal.com and fansided.com, where we discuss all things Toronto Blue Jays baseball. We'll talk about news, rumors, and game recaps. So whether you're a diehard fan or just getting started with the team, this is the podcast for you. Here's your host, Craig Borden, with co-hosts Jason Lyons and me, Ken Alfred. You're listening to the Jay Bird Watching Podcast.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Jay Bird Watching. I'm sorry if the intro there just kind of clipped out like it did on my end, Jason, but I'm here, man. I promise.
I think today has been a day riddled with incident as we try and make this, for the people who are watching at home and you know, our subscribers and stuff, Craig and I both have day jobs and kids and fun stuff like that that sometimes get in the way, and so we've fist fought to get ourselves here today, so let's have a little fun.
Yes, exactly. Keyword, let's have some fun. And there's actually some good Blue Jays news that actually came out, Jason, that I don't know if you had a happen to see yet. But have you seen who happens to be our number one starter for this season so far?
Yeah, I think they're going with Berríos, yeah?
You are correct, sir. So we have seen the evolution of Jose Berríos as Toronto Blue Jays fans and what has been good, bad, ugly, and everything in between. So to that point, this spring has looked like the Jose Berríos that we saw last year. I'm very excited. I really hope he gets a chance to, redeem himself for his opening day starts, because the last one was pretty damn rough when he went to the mound for the opening day Blue Jays.
He actually, I would say he's even taken one step further this year than as good as he looked last year. He is in unbelievable shape. I mean, I don't know how much you've seen of him, tip top shape. He really, you know, and everything that he says and does is directing himself to sort of wanting to be the captain of that pitching squad that we thought he probably could have been when the Jays got him. You know, he seems to be sort of like a quiet leader that goes out there and does his job. And the Jays have a couple of those guys, but it's nice to see, you know, nice to see him step up and really start to make some stuff happen for himself. And, you know, I think it translates into a really good one spot for us. And depending on how the guy's arms, because that was the other thing, is that, you know, we're not getting any luck on the arms right now in spring training. Yeah. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's, we've got to count on the, on our strength, which is going to be our starters, I think. You know, it's spring training is proving to be a long one for a lot of teams. I don't know if you've seen, you know, how many injuries are sort of showing up for different teams, but it's, there's a litany of pitchers, have been hurt this year.
Yeah. Well, we kind of touched on that a little last week with our competition in the AL East anyways. The
good friend Yankees Garrett are Cole.
Looking for a good few weeks without Garrett Cole.
Yeah. And
so that's a good one.
How surprising was Snell going to the Giants? Like, I mean, I would have thought for, what was it, $63 million? I would have thought there would have been other suitors in that ballpark at $30 million. I mean,
yeah. And to that point, I think there probably was. And I would like to say that the Blue Jays were in on that too. But at the end of the day, I think he wanted to stay on the West Coast. You know how he is with the little leagues and stuff like that over there in that side of the States.
Yeah.
Exactly. So that's one of those things that I think makes him makes that commute for him easier for when he wants to do that kind of stuff in his personal life. So
probably
it's probably hand in hand with the other. But to your point, this is a very win now move for actually the San Francisco Giants. For a team
that's kind of all in right now. They made some big moves. They signed some big names, and they weren't allowed. They weren't afraid to throw a little money around, and they're going to be. I mean, I know that the Dodgers are an absolute joke in the they're going to be very, 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 very tough to beat, and so are the Braves. But I mean, the Giants have really made an effort to put themselves into the conversation. It'll be really interesting to see what the year brings for that San Francisco Giants team.
Yeah, I was just having a look through the MLB, injury reports and stuff like that, and seeing that apparently DJ LeMay, who's going to miss opening day for the Yankees as well.
Yeah,
just looking down there as it's the name of all names on their team, and Judge is still hoping to get ready for opening day. The Red Sox lost Lucas Giolito already.
Yep.
To Tommy John or UCL surgery. So one of their other pitchers was in that ballpark. Taj Bradley for the really good young pitcher for the Rays, who we're going to be facing in our first series. He is going to be out. That Baz kid is still hoping to get back and healthy for the Rays. Everybody's looking pretty damn banged up at the middle, and the Blue Jays are unfortunately no exception to that right now too, because you've heard the fact that we're hoping to get Gausman back here in the near future. He took some good strides apparently in the bullpen the other day. Blue Jay report here.
Well, and then on the other side of that, Romano and Swanson, are now starting to deal with some soreness in their elbows. And so, you got to start to wonder to yourself, and it's not something that I've ever really paid attention to, but I'm wondering if those guys threw more innings or less innings in this spring training, or, I know there's been a couple of additional games added on, but if that's the case, then don't you sort of think to yourself, why aren't they pitching some of these young guys more? And letting your starters are your starters. Like Brios doesn't have to make the team. Gausman doesn't have to make the team. Bassett doesn't have to make the team. Maybe trot them out for a couple of three inning, stints, and let them throw imaginary games, and just keep them to that. It's like hockey. You don't see the superstars playing, and that's why they don't blow their groins out. They can have a 15 game preseason because they want the kids to come up and play. They want to pump up, to see if there's anybody that's going to challenge. But, nine times out of ten, there's no one that is. So, it sucks to see all these arms go down. But, it'd be interesting after it's all done to do a comparison to see if they actually threw more or less or what.
So I remember hearing this a lot, and I'm sure you've heard this too. This time of year, the Blue Jays, or just pitchers in general, right? The first few weeks of spring training, the pitchers are usually ahead of the hitters. And then it turns into a little bit more of a meld toward the end as you obviously get toward actual opening day, right? I've heard multiple pitchers say this. Bullpen guys, starting pitchers, anything. No matter how many innings they throw or don't throw, all these kind of things during spring training, at some point, every pitcher in spring training goes through what they call a dead arm period, where it's just you weren't used to working at this point. You weren't doing that. Are these things the dead arm period that they're just reporting it as these things, or it's surfacing as those minor injuries and things like that? It could be a million one of those things, but I think this is something that a lot of these injuries we've been hearing with the strains, the tweaks, the cranky shoulder that Alek Manoah has been dealing with kind of things. I wonder, and I take with a grain of salt a little bit this time of year, just because they are in that trying to stretch out, trying to get ready for the grind of a full Major League Baseball season. And it is just what it is, I think, a little bit to that point. But it is seems, I don't know if it's the media reporting it more this year or what, but to that point, it does seem in baseball in general, period, this year, it seems more prevalent.
Yeah, and I think that in some cases, too, I think it's a cautionary move. Like, I think where Romano says he's got elbow soreness, they're going to hold him out. They don't want to push him. They certainly don't want to pitch him for any more of the preseason games if they don't need to. And so I think as long as you can sort of say, that he's he's going to do this, or he's working on this, then at least he's, you know, he doesn't have to go out. He can still go and throw a couple of soft innings. You know, and I mean, Jano's hurt, you know, it, again, I think his is pretty soft as well. Like, I think at this point right now, they finally, you know, got smart and sort of just left him off. But I mean, Swanson and Romano, they it's just tightness, you know, like it's not like anything's happened, but you know, it is starting to be a little bit more of a push where maybe these guys are, maybe they're not doing enough in the off season to come in cold. I mean, to throw a baseball 97 miles an hour is a taxing thing to do on your arm, no matter how much you're doing. So,
yeah. Because the other con on that whole thing is maybe they're doing too much there in the off season, and then they come maybe in and have this. I watch, being here in the States, I don't get the pleasure of watching Sportsnet all the time, but I do get to watch the Major League Baseball Network all the time. And I've heard John Smoltz, of all people, say this repeatedly, and he thinks that all these Tommy John surgeries, this thing, that thing, all these things that are happening with pitchers' arms are the actual opposite of the whole innings limit thing. He really thinks that the innings limits are actually what's hurting a lot of players, and not being able to just go out there and keep stretching and keeping it loose and just constantly throwing, going and going and going, is actually what's hurting some of these young players.
Yeah, there's some, I mean,
school it, thoughts for that, right?
Yeah, it's super interesting you would say that, because one of the guys that I play hockey with, and I mean, this is super old man, gross, sweaty old guys playing hockey, but he said the school of thought now for any of the major sports is don't pre-stretch. All you're doing is you're taking a cold muscle, you're making it longer, and you're not engaging it, and then you go to engage for the sport and you've made the muscle longer, but you haven't done anything to it. So, you know, to be anaerobic or to be aerobic and do running in place and that kind of stuff, that's certainly now the push for, like, if you watch an NHL warm-up or a NBA warm-up, it's much more, they don't stretch as much. And the stretching is post. Nathan MacKinnon is a perfect example. The Colorado Avalanche have actually had to change their travel schedule so he can stretch for 40 minutes after the games. And he's got the whole team doing it now. And I mean, obviously the Avs are a very good hockey team and they're really fast. So maybe there's more to this than what you'd say. And you know, there's always a bit of a stretch, but I mean, you know, we try and take the kids when we've got them out, and you know, obviously you have to limber your arms up and all this other stuff, but we've been looking at more and more aerobic ways to do that rather than doing the sort of over the head and then this one and then this one and then this one, you know, like, so
things that are more in the motion of the sport, right? Not that kind of idea, correct? I always thought it was interesting that, you know, I know there was a whole other story attached to this gentleman, but the fact that, like, back in the day, you heard Steve Delabarre, right? He came back into baseball and he was doing the weighted baseball program. He, you know, there's a reason that he ended up, you know, gaining up all that arm strength and a lot of those things outside. Like I said, he did get caught doing some extracurricular activities in his training regiment. But like you said, using the right method to simulate actual sports stuff and be able to do that and not just, like you said, stretch it out and hope for the best. I do think there is a clashing in the midst of training period right now, in that midst of old school and new school. And you see it all the way down to little leagues and like we're talking about here with Major League Baseball players. So it's going to be interesting to see where the sport looks like with the training methods in the next few years, because you talk about what the Blue Jays have compared to a lot of baseball players or teams around here right now. And we had that right from the, you know, the best person we could literally get it from the other day with the, you know, vice mayor of Dunedin, Mo Freeney, being on here talking about the Blue Jays sports complex that they have down in Dunedin. And that's a year-round facility for the Blue Jays. So maybe the guys were there a little too early, to your point, or maybe they all needed to be there that early.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something to be said for the team showing up a little earlier and getting into that sort of mode of being, you know, athletic and charging up the muscles and getting things ready to go. I don't know of the, like, even right now, you know, like, we're trying to mitigate how many pitches the kids throw. Even now, you know, well before the season starts, just knowing that you know, in a couple of weeks, we're going to get smashed with a bunch of games in a row. We know that we have to limit what they throw in practice. And, you know, we've even seen with some of the teams that we deal with, the older teams, they're like, don't throw at all. Just come hit. You know, we'll do a little infield. And rather than even throwing from like third or short to one, that just throw it in the bucket. Yep. Make the motion, throw it in the bucket. Make the motion, throw it in the bucket. Or do it halfway. I mean, the Tommy Johns isn't a fix-all. And there's a lot of guys. I mean, you and I could go on tour in the U.S. and probably find 8,000 guys whose shoulder, elbow are blown out that had at least a decent shot and, you know, didn't maintain, didn't take care of their arms. And, you know, they get to the point where, you know, where they're wearing a sling on a podcast. Hey-o!
I was wondering when you were going to get to that joke. He's making fun of me, y'all. I got her at work, unfortunately. So it would have been too much of a blaze of glory if I got her playing baseball, right?
Yeah, I know.
Or, sorry to say, the slow-pitch softball wiffle ball league I play in isn't exactly the biggest thing in the world anymore. But to that point, I do think there's something there to that point. And I'll give you one other tidbit to that whole thing, Jason, is I know you're an avid golfer yourself, too. You're in that ballpark like me. You're only so good at it, though. But that's besides the point. My friends started making fun of me last year because I stopped taking practice swings, and then I started beating them.
Yeah.
Trevino. It was that.
Lee Trevino never took a practice swing in his whole career, I don't think. And, I mean, it's muscle memory. And if you watch even the best, like even Tiger and Rory, they stand back and they might take a halfer or two halfers, and then they stand up and they go at it. And it's to be explosive, you just need to be loose. You don't have to have stretched yourself out to a limit. And, again, you know, I think that there is something to be said for overstretching, for overusing those muscles and overworking them. I mean, you know, does Major League Baseball have to maybe consider the fact that they need to add an extra starter, you know, an extra starter to the lineups to allow them to have that extra arm? Like, I mean, is that, I don't see that being such a huge deal. I mean, I know that the starters want to get their starts, but I mean, you're playing 1,000 games a season right now. Like, an extra starter is not going to kill anybody. And
just be put out there right now, how many more? They're not pitching anywhere near. Do you see what? Like, you go look at Nolan Ryan's freaking. No. There was days, you know, when there's a story of Satchel Paige, right? When he came over from the Negro Leagues into Major League Baseball, that he pitched a doubleheader all on his own.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, look at Maddox. Look at Greg Maddox. Look at Smoltz. Look at these guys' numbers from when they pitch. They are insane. And then we talk about guys getting you 200 innings last year. It's like, come on. Like, Smoltz got to that with his other hand, you know, throwing
half a season.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane. It's not even comparable anymore. And you know, it goes back to the old argument, like, what were those guys doing? I mean, they were working out and drinking beer and you know, maybe it gets too specific. You know, maybe it gets too specific when you get to the point of all of the extra stuff and the extra, you know, but yeah, I don't know. I mean,
Nolan Ryan, I just pulled up his baseball reference page because I was just curious. He led the league in innings once with 332 and 2/3 innings. And you look at even at his age 45, 44, 43, he was over 150 innings. At the age of 43, he threw 204 innings for the Texas Rangers in 1990. And see, mind you, this is a guy incredible. That no-hit the eventual to be 1993 World Series champions. So
I don't know. I mean, it's, you know, I think it's a little, you know, the players are a little softer. I mean, I love baseball, but I've always found the players to be a little bit soft. I mean, there's guys who are not soft. There's guys who, you know, and don't get me wrong, Cal Ripken did amazing things to be able to play as many games as he did. But, you know, there's guys who have more hard miles on them, I think, than Cal Ripken. Look at a guy like Joey Votto. Like, how many, up until like last year, how many games did he missed? Almost none, you know? And
playing first base all those because he played in the National League.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, to all of those people out there that sort of question, you know, how a guy like Big Poppy could play another like 20 years or 15 years after stopping his positional play, I challenge you to go up and hit home runs as well as he did. And, you know, if you're really good at something, then you don't really necessarily have to run, do you? So, I mean, it's, you know, it's an interesting sport because it does allow for that. And it does allow for guys who maybe aren't the most athletic, but they're really good at one thing. And hitting a baseball is a very specific thing to be good at. But let's also, you know, say that you see some guys like Aaron Judge. Look at Juan Carlos Stanton. Like, how many times has that guy been hurt? Like, I mean, it's outrageous to me how often that dude is hurt when
you're talking about a guy that was probably an easy Hall of Famer and then he just couldn't stay healthy.
He's not John Kruk. He's not diving for balls and out of shape dude. He's a big in shape guy who I've never seen him crash into a wall or overextend to get a baseball. He's just kind of out there and seems to get hurt all the time.
He was always the one that I was wondering if it was like, if you're too bulk for baseball, you know what I mean? Like if you went to the point where your muscles are just so freaking swole.
Well, that's the Aaron Judge. Like Aaron Judge has always been that big. Right. And I mean, we had McGuire. We've had the baseball's had some yoked dudes. And I mean, right now you're probably seeing some of the most yoked, but
yeah, but look at let's just uncork that one a little bit. Look at the best hitters in Major League Baseball hitters, right? You're looking at somebody like Tony Gwynn, right? Who was a stretch fry that filled out pretty amply at that point. I love Tony Gwynn. One of the best hitters of all time. And I love getting to watch any interview and any teaching instruction video I can ever find on Tony Gwynn. Then you look at the quote unquote greatest hitter of all time, Pete Rose. Pete Rose looked like he rolled off the freaking couch from a Monday night hangover.
It's the two extremes though. It's you either look like that, and there's a lot of really good hitters that look like a marshmallow, and then there's also a lot of really good hitters that look like Ichiro and Mookie Betts, you know, like Andrew Jones, like sort of undersized, in good shape, you know, shifty. Jose Altuve, like still no I Bregman, no idea how Altuve hits the ball out as often as he does, but you know, you look at a guy like Mook or you look at a guy like Andrew Jones, you know, like Andrew Jones was I'm a phenomenal hitter and not a big guy. But you know,
but then for every one of those stories, like you mentioned, you get a Bo Jackson or like you said, a freaking monster, you know, freak. Right? So
we can call him
it is freak. What it is.
Yeah.
So I want to go back a little bit in this conversation because something dawned on me here that I've been meaning to talk about on this show for a few months and weeks. Every year about this time, MajorLeagueBaseball.com always puts out an article that says, who can break some records this year, right? We were talking about the innings limits and all that stuff. Do you ever think that we're going to see a 20-game winner or a 300-win career guy anytime soon?
No.
The closest guy on record right now is Kershaw.
Yeah.
And he's not even close.
No. I don't think anybody's got the longevity. I don't think, based on the fact that most MLB contracts now, they make them so long and so extended that these guys are like, screw it. When I hit 38, I'm still going to get paid even if I don't play. So I'm just going to go to then and I'm not going to push it past that. I mean, you know, like you said, like Kershaw is, you know, who would be next behind him? Verlander maybe? Like, I mean, he'd probably
be him or Scherzer.
Yeah, they'd be the next closest sort of in that class. But the rest of them seem to be happy with a 6 to 10 year career, if even they push it to 10, and they just hang them up. And you know, I think that gone are the days of watching, you know, a 48-year-old Roberto Clemente run himself out onto out onto the field, or you know, even an early like Joey Votto being an anomaly at what is he? Is he 39 or is 40. He 41?
He's 40.
Yeah, so he's an anomaly where he could probably get through this year without any trouble. He probably will, you know, if the Jays sign him, I think he's going to get 15 or 16 home runs, maybe a little bit more, and be a very effective player. Justin Turner's not a, you know, he's no spring chicken. He'll do the same. You know, Brandon Belt was the same. So I feel like there is some of that, but it's always position players. I don't see pitchers hanging on anymore. It's just not in there. I don't think it's in their physical interest anymore to do so. There's so many kids coming up. Most of the pitchers can stay on the staff if they're on contract, right? So they still stay on. They'll be a pitching consultant or they'll be a whatever. And, you get the best of both worlds because they're still there. They're still part of the game. They're still, you know, imparting knowledge onto the 22-year-old Ricky Tiedemanns and guys that are coming up. Yeah. But they're not ripping their shoulder out of the socket to try and throw a 94-mile-an-hour fastball that someone crushes into the fourth deck. Like, I mean, it's just like Kershaw is not an effective pitcher anymore. Like, I love Clayton Kershaw. The guy has had a phenomenal career. Yeah. The stuff that he's done outside of baseball is monumental. You can't take that away. He needs to stop pitching. Yep. He was so bad last year.
I was actually wrong. I thought he was the top guy, but this list is insane. I pulled up the active wins leaders in Major League Baseball.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of dumbfounded by this list because the variance with how many wins are at number one and how many they're at number 10.
Oh, it's got to be huge.
It's a difference in 150 wins from those spots.
Wow.
that's some of the careers for the guys that are on this list, for fuck's sake.
So
number one is Justin Verlander is the current active leader in Major League Baseball. And he's at his age 40, and he has 257 career wins. We mentioned one of the other ones, but one I honestly completely blanked on because I forgot he's actually going to play this year. Zach Greinke is number two.
Oh, yeah, he's old too, isn't he?
Correct. He's 39, but he's got 225. So you already have a difference in almost 30 right there. Yeah. So,
and Zach Greinke is not going to get, if Zach Greinke gets five wins this year, I think Zach Greinke should get a cake or something.
Correct. So, but to that point, you got Verlander doing Verlander things at the age of 40. So he'll be him tacking another 10 on that's not surprising to me. But no. How many more years is he going to play? So he's not getting to 300 is my guess. The next closest person is down at 214. And it's former old teammate, to your point a minute ago, Justin Verlander, Max Scherzer.
Yeah.
And then Clayton Kershaw. And the one that actually really kind of shocked me, because of knowing where he started his career, I can't believe he got this many wins to even be in this ballpark. I guess that just shows you what he did in Houston. Gerrit Cole's number five on this list with 145.
Wow.
But Kershaw's got 210.
Yeah.
The next person down, 145, is Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
But it's only 32.
It's pretty amazing, actually. So, but again, I don't think the size of the contracts that these guys are signing does not make them want to continue to play. I mean, they've made their loot. I think for some guys that the World Series is an important thing, but I feel like it's almost become secondary to making your nut and still getting out of the game healthy or healthy-ish. You know, I would say on whole, when you see retired baseball players or you're watching MLB Network and you see Harold Reynolds and you see all these other guys, for the most part, they seem to be in the best shape because most of them got out of it before that. You see, like, you see Kareem get up at a
before they turn into Lenny Dykstra.
Yeah. you see, a basketball player get up in an event and you're like, oh, please don't stand up. No, you're too tall. You're going to fall over. Like, and hockey players, their faces are all banged up and they're limping and all the rest of it. Where baseball players are kind of like you look at A-Rod or Jeter and you're like, oh, you look fine. you worked out this morning and you had a yogurt and you look good.
Yeah. So to ask you the fun part here, who do you think was the last person to actually get their 300th win?
Actively?
Oh, God. The last pitcher in Major League Baseball to log their 300th win. And I'll give you a hint that it wasn't in the last 10 years or 15 for that matter.
Woof. I was going
to go all the way back to the year 2009 to be able to figure this one out.
Wow. Carlton?
Nope.
Who is it?
2009. The guy that killed the dove in
Randy Johnson.
So, and then right before him, Tom Glavine and Greg Maddux. So
yeah, I was thinking Glavine.
You are right that Steve Carlton's on that list, but it wasn't that far back. Honestly, there's a few that Nolan Ryan since Carlton, and Carlton got his 300th win apparently all the way back in 1983. I didn't realize it was that long ago either. So
there you go.
But to that point, 'tis what it is. Yep. I think that's one of those things that's not going to happen anymore. Just like how nobody has a chance in hell of ever breaking any of Ricky Henderson's stolen base records. No. The game's not made that way. I don't care how good Ronald Acuña is. He's going to hit too many home runs that won't allow him to steal bases.
Right. Right. Where Ricky, I mean, Ricky had a job. Ricky's job was to get on, steal two, get home. You know,
like, yep.
It's what they did.
And then get the little bit lock and, and go out. So just to be fun. So, but that's really cool stuff. But let's get back to where we started this conversation, that Jose Berríos is going to be the starting rotation, opening day starter, and get us going. We were talking about the good of everything. We have already seen that we got Bassett, Gausman, Berríos, and we have Yusei Kikuchi, who's also still looking pretty damn good this season. So we have really three starters, Jason, that are aces. We have Kikuchi, and then where I was going to with this thing is we still have the fifth spot open. Do you know who the current front runner is now that Alek Manoah is clearly not going to make opening day with his cranky shoulder and just not being able to be ready to go?
Well, I want to say I want to hope against hope that it's Ricky Tiedemann, but it's probably not. It's probably what's his name? And I can't ever remember his name. He's got the mustache and the blonde hair.
You got the great guy. It's Bowden Francis.
Yes, Bowden Francis. I don't know why I can't remember that guy's name, but I can't.
It's because he's like half pirate, half beach bum for you at the same time with the mustache. There's something you're just thinking of. Ah. So, but to that point, he has had an incredible spring, Jason, and I've been very intrigued watching him. We talked about him being one of our dark horse candidates to steal this fifth spot. I think actually you and I with Ken one night, that was when you and I were beating on pretty good. I'm honestly quite happy with having somebody with his ridiculous sweep moving in right before you would get back to number one with Berríos that next day, because it's going to be a different look a little bit for you. So I'm actually kind of intrigued with that idea, having him as our fifth starter. What say ye?
I really like him. I mean, I think that he has shown that he has, a very high level of velocity. I feel like he has shown that he can make the right pitches in the right situations and hit his spots. Like, even though it's spring training, I feel like, he had a good thing going with Jansen before Jansen got hurt, and the new catcher has done a really good job of not only filling in but really helping out these young pitchers. You know, I gotta give it to some of these guys. I feel like it's been management. It's been a few different things that have Brian Severin. I feel like there's been a few really good things to come out of spring training. The arm stuff, I don't like. I don't. It's it bothers me a lot. But I think that, you know, like I said, I think that Romero, I think they'll all be fine. The guys who just have a little soreness right now. I think the positives obviously are the bats have been unbelievable. Some of the batting averages and just watching some of the games where, you know, it's Varsho gets a hit, somebody hits him around, somebody hits him home, which is what we've been missing for 2 years, like manufacturing runs. And it's interesting to listen to some people who are sort of off the deep end about the Jays losing some of the games that they've been losing. But I beg of you, people of the internet and of sports fans and all of the rest of it, know that a guy like Kevin Kiermaier, who has hit three home runs, which is awesome. I mean, we don't count on Kevin to be the leader of the Jays in home runs at this point, but we'll take it. And if you watch Kiermaier's at bats, or if you watch Springer's at bats, if you even watch Bowen and Vladdy, they're actually trying to get themselves into situations and seeing if they can be better than the pitcher that's pitching to them. And right. So Bo struck out, it was 2 games ago, he struck out on 3 high fastballs that if he swung at those 3 months from now in the season, I'd be ripping my hair out. But I'm not now.
No, it's different.
Because what he's trying to do is he's trying to hit that pitch because it's a very common strikeout pitch. Like if you know that the guys are going to throw you letter high fast, you have to be good enough to get around on it. And spring training is the time that you work on that. And then, I mean, Bo's been good enough that he'll, you know, if he gets 5 ABs, he may strike out those 2, but he's going to get 2 more hits. it's some of the other guys, you know, when you look at their averages and you look at what they're doing, it's actually pretty impressive. You know, some of the guys have really put up, you know, like monster numbers as of right now. And, you know, some of them have had a lot of at bats. And one of the things that surprised me, and I don't know if you noticed this, but Vladdy has only played in 10 games of the 14 possible, I think. And you know, Vladdy's hitting .444. Like that's, it's nuts. Like, I mean, if he,
and I think the biggest takeaway from that is he's hitting the ball up the middle. He's not
everywhere. Yeah. Hard.
It's looking like the Vladdy of near MVP to me at this point. I just hope I'm trying not to get my hopes up on it too much, but it's just because I need him to be that guy. So I'm trying to be nice to myself. But well, you brought then, up the go on.
And then Bo. I mean, Bo Bichette at this point right now, he is, I mean, he's played 14 games, he's had 42 at bats, and he's hitting .405.
Yes.
I don't know if there's any other shortstop in the majors right now that's doing that. And he's defensively, he's been unbelievable.
Yep. I think the one that really stands out this spring as far as health and currently where they're at is we are seeing a resurgent George Springer.
Yeah.
He's been doing incredible. And he had another home run the other day, three of them so far. Then we've also seen Alejandro Kirk just mash.
Nah.
This isn't Captain Kirk anymore. This might be back to where I was calling him King Kirk.
Yeah.
Because that's they called him back in freaking Bluefield.
You know, like in Ken's honor for him not being here, the maple beef is crushing maple the baseball. and he looks like, I mean, I remember when Kirk came up the first little while, he was so ball hungry. He was hitting it all over the place. The ones that he was catching not full, he was still hitting out. I mean, he has an unbelievable amount of power packed into that little Humpty Dumpty body. But, you know, sustainably, even if those three...
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes. So doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Four guys. Let's include Springer in that because he's been unreal. If those four guys can just drop down a little bit, you're still going to have four guys hitting in the high threes or mid threes. And if that's the case, then I mean it's so huge for those extra runs because you're slotting those bats into different parts of the order. And I mean it can be so effective later on down the year. And I would be remiss to say, because I have smashed this guy up at every opportunity that I have, Dalton Varsho, I apologize.
He's looking very good as well.
I think what we're starting to see, and we talked a little bit about this last week, was I think we're starting to see the dude that they were willing to give Gabby Moreno away for.
Correct.
And he's
and to that point, I have friends outfield that live in Arizona. They were actually very, very upset about losing Dalton Varsho. And then obviously I'm like, oh, trust me, you're going to be perfectly fine.
They're fine now.
they know that. Yeah. We're still waiting for that. We know it now, and it's evened out a little bit. But to that point, Jason, the main topic today was I wanted to talk exactly where we're going here, and that is that the Blue Jays offense appears to be doing the little things so far this spring that we needed them to do last year. You know, Kevin Gausman goes out there and puts up and drops dimes into the strike zone, that allows only a few hits and one run, and you lose a ball game. This offense, the way it's constructed and looking right now on the stat sheet I have on the other part of my screen, this is the Blue Jay offense that we were hoping that was going to trend in last year. And it has never found that catalyst or that extra piece, whatever it might be. We might be getting that catalyst in some way, like Votto when he comes back here, because we got to talk about that wonderful thing that he hits a home run in his first at bat. And first then pitch. Steps on a fucking baseball bat. That's first nothing pitch. But Blue Jay luck right there. Yeah. Yes. First pitch destroyed it. I think it was a liner. I can't believe it even got out. So, but to that point, this offense looks like they figured out maybe how to do the little things of getting the runner in from third, moving them up to get to that run, and then coming up with a big hit when they need to. Yeah. I'm hoping it's just not spring training stuff, but seeing that it's not just one person that's taking that to that part of that conversation you were discussing, but there's a collective of guys finding ways to get hits in those spring training games to bring in runs. And we've seen it in spades. They put up another 8 spot today and lost because of bullpen and stuff issues, but that's all beside the point. I'm more curious of the offense right now.
I mean, here's a stat that I'll throw at you. And I mean, I think this speaks exactly to what you're talking about. So as it stands right now, 3, 4, 5, 6, the Jays have 8 players right now that have more than 2 doubles. Like, that's what scores runs. Hitting a double almost always scores a run. If it doesn't, you know, it's, you know, that is what kills the Jays. But it's you know,
and Nathan, I think the better part out of that list is those are guys outside of Gabriel Martinez.
Yeah, like Bichette has
those 4. Are all guys that are on a team.
Luke has 3. Kirk has 3. Robin Biggio, for the amount of time he's played, he's been unbelievable as
well. He's figuring it out.
3 doubles, you know, 6 hits, 3 of them are doubles. I mean, it's pretty impressive, you know, and you know, I hate to go back and kick the dead horse with Bo, but I mean, Bo Bichette has 17 hits in 14 games. Like, let's just grab onto that for a second and nuzzle Jesus it time. Over. Just like, and I know he was red hot last year, you know, after spring training, he came out of the gate and then he had a massive, was it September? He had just a monster September.
Yeah.
But I feel like these guys have finally said, well, you know, we can't let Bo just do everything here. Like, we have to be responsible for pulling up our socks. And if you look at the scores, so where we were talking about, you know, sort of losing those 1-0 games, the only game that they've had, they've had 2 that were sort of, you know, pitching duels that weren't very good. They had a 3-2 win over the Rays, and they lost to the Red Sox 3-1. Otherwise, you know, they've put a 5 spot on pretty much everybody they've played, whether it was winning or losing. And, you know, they've had a couple of 13-run games, a couple of 10-run games, and that's all super positive. You know, even the ones that like losing today, 13-8. I mean, in 2 games, one against the Twins, one against the Orioles, you know, it's 17 runs is a lot of runs. And that's with basically their major league team playing. I mean, that's they basically have the guys that are going to be playing every day. And I think it also highlights how scary the Orioles are going to be. But let's, you know, we'll save that for, we're all corked out on
control what day. You can control, my friend. There's one interesting stat amongst that's a comment against a couple of those guys that you were just mentioning. One of them really, really stands out, and how somebody's late appearances might have been very different between this last year and where they're at right now so far this spring. You mentioned Dalton Varsho. He's having a great spring. The one thing that really jumped off the paper to me is the fact that out of all those games he's played in, he also has 9 walks. That is the most of any Toronto Blue Jays so far this spring. The other gentleman that you mentioned is Kevin Biggio, has always had a great eye, but he's kind of chased a little bit the last couple of years. And I think it's because he was hurt. He's trying to stay in the lineup. might have been pressing a little bit, you know, because he's trying to stay in the lineup.
Yep.
I think he might have gotten back to his game. He might finally feel good and be able to do what he wants. In those eight games, having seven walks is pretty damn impressive, especially when you're not playing every game. So, but then the other ones that I thought were IKF's taking really good at bats. Same thing with Justin Turner, Springer, same thing. All like there's a trend. I wonder if there's been a mantra that's finally changed in that hitting coach ballpark there with now that, like I said, you have Matt Haig, you have Donnie Baseball that's in a little bit of a role in that piece too, along with everybody else that was doing that beforehand. So there's some other voices in that dugout that might be steering some better hitting coach kind of mantras to the right people, or maybe it's just that different voice to get somebody like Varsha to say, hey, you know what, just take a pitch.
Yeah.
See what happens.
And you know, like I said, I also feel like maybe the Jays have been squeezing it for the last couple of years a little bit with the expectation of them, you know, coming out of the gate, doing well with World Series expectations, where now, I mean, they even said, Springer even said it the other day. He was like, you know, people aren't predicting us to you know, win the World Series this year. Like, it's not... Yeah. It's not like it's us and somebody else that have been picked already to go to the dance. We're going to have to earn it. And, you know, for the first time, I think, you know, in sort of this Bo Vladdy, you know, era, I feel like they've been challenged. And this this spring training is showing that they've got the you know, the sack to actually win. Like, they've actually got the stones to say, you know what, we're going to go get you four. Like, sorry, Goss. Like, you know, like, we pooched that one. We're going to go get you four right now. Like, you just stay there for a second and, you know, one of us will do it. And, you know, I'm with Vladdy. Bring back the jacket. Get a helmet. Get a CN Tower outfit. I don't even care what you get, but get something that starts to galvanize those guys and, you know, make them feel
something
accountable.
Something to look forward to.
Yeah, make them feel accountable to that good starting pitching, though. Like, if you look at those Braves teams that had Glavin and Maddux, they felt accountable to that, to those pitchers. And if you watch teams, if you watch teams that win the World Series, they feel accountable to those pitchers because those pitchers do such hard work. And I feel like the Jays have sort of been like, thanks, guys, but, you know, whatever. Where this year, I feel like even the games where you've watched some of the other pitchers come in that have a sniff at making the team, it may not be a lock, but the team has performed better in front of them than in spring trainings prior.
Mm-hmm. So I agree with you. It's amazing what a difference in I just being a Bills fan, I can't stand watching us going, let's go to the Super Bowl this year, and then lose in the second round. And it's been the same thing with my Blue Jays for how many years now? We'll see what happens, but maybe there is something with that coming with a chip on your shoulder, with something to prove, and just make the AL East shove it.
Yeah. You know what I mean? I mean, it's
something like that.
All you can hope. And I, you know, again, I think if we went back and watched the tape from our show last year about this time, we had a much different outlook. That we were talking about playoffs. We were talking about World Series. I can remember it specifically where they were talking about how high the Jays were rated versus, you know, we were like, oh, you've underrated the Rays. You've underrated the Orioles. And a lot of that stuff came to fruition. You know, I feel like a lot of the teams that made it were vastly underrated. I think the Rangers being one of the main ones as being a really underrated squad. So, I mean, the pundits don't really know much. And I do agree with you. I think that the Jays being challenged this year, I feel like the chip on the shoulder is kind of how Vladdy plays better. I feel like Bo Bichette realizes that he is sort of standing on the precipice between, you know, him being compared to Derek Jeter. I think that
there is some point to that.
Yeah. I feel like he's finally said, you know, hey, you know what, guys, I'm really good at this game. I'm good at it, you know, defensively and offensively. And I'm not going to take my foot off the pedal, whether you guys come with me or not. I'm just going to keep performing all year. And so I think that, you know, the sort of, now that they know Berríos and now that they know Bassett, now that they know Gausman, they've had some time with them, they feel responsible for getting them some runs. And they also want to win. I feel like last year, mm-hmm. the year prior, sure, you know, it was what it was. But last year, I feel like they really felt like they let a lot of people down, including themselves. Like, I think they had much higher hopes for the season. They had much higher hopes for the end of the season. And I feel like they're going to go into this year, you know, with expectations being lower. They're still high. I mean, I would still think if you did a power ranking right now, they're probably, what would you say, sixth? Seventh, maybe?
I would say the problem is it's our division, but you're talking, looking at Major League Baseball, they're a top 10 team regardless.
Yes, that's what I meant. I meant
not, and there's no thought in that. Yeah. You know, it's not even a thought to that. But to that point, we said this, I think, last year too on the show, Jason. And if this team performed up to the back of their baseball cards last year, this is not an 89-win team. This is a 90-something win team.
Easy.
So if you do get Vladdy performing to 2022 ball, or 2021, I take that back. You get Dalton Varsho to look like the guy he traded for in Arizona. You get George Springer to do some of the stuff he's been doing over the years and keep doing George Springer. There's a lot to this, and we got the best out of Double K last year. You get that combination of Jansen and Kirk back at catcher instead of having a collective 183 batting average last year at the catcher position. Or whatever it was something damn near that. There's something to say that. And I think really at the end of the day, that offense comes from those places. And then you added a seasoned veteran like Justin Turner to a spot that's going to somehow help this lineup, whether it's at second, third, short, whatever. I don't care at this point. DH. And then you find a way to sprinkle in some Joey Votto.
Yeah.
There's not a problem here.
No.
I think the offense is better.
I feel like as optimistic as we were last year, I think that we sort of had stars in our eyes a little bit looking towards October. And I feel like, you know, as and I'm living this right now. Like, I mean, I'm a lifelong Vancouver Canucks fan. And as most people know, and lots of people bring up, and I'm reminded about it all the time, the Canucks have never won the Stanley Cup as the Canucks. They have as the Vancouver Millionaires. That doesn't count. Anyone that tells you it does, it doesn't. So, you know, right now, as it stands, the Canucks are like the third best team in the NHL. And, you know, they go on a 4-game winning streak and beat three of the teams that are considered to be better than they are in the NHL. You know, they've had an incredible season. They look phenomenal. And it's still, I still have this thing in the pit of my stomach here that's just like,
you've been hanging out with me on here too much, man. That's all.
Well, I mean, we got the Bills, the Jays, and I got the Canucks.
Yeah,
I know. But for the first time in a long time, I'm going into this season as a Blue Jays fan with nothing but hope, with nothing but, you know, I really want Vladdy to overperform. I want Bo to hit 400. I want Dalton Varsho to be Dalton Varsho. I want Kiermaier to hit 25 and have a great year. But if they don't, I'm not going to be overly surprised. I think that I've hedged myself a little bit back from the edge of the last year and the year prior where we really thought they were going to win the World Series. I don't think you would argue with me that last year around this time we thought there was a good chance they would win the World Series. My hope is that misdirected, that, you know, sort of, there's a lot of talk about the guys on this team realizing now that they're playing for a nation, not for a city. And I feel like that weight is now starting to show itself and sort of say, you know, all right, let's go get this done. Even if we get past the first round and get into the, you know, the American League, then who knows what can happen past that, you know?
Yeah.
If we can take the first bullet out of that gun, I mean, we're going up against almost a mirror image of ourselves in most of those better teams, so.
Correct. And to that point, I don't think that the Yankees, the Orioles, the Rays are anything different or better than us. I think everybody's got their own strengths, and because right now you look at the Yankees, okay, they're going to hit. I don't know, have any clue what the hell their pitching is going to do. They are hoping Marcus Stroman's going to do what he did with the Cubs. They are hoping that Nestor Cortez figures it out again. They're going to hope that Garrett Cole isn't is not as hurt as they thought he was originally. And they're hoping to get some the best stuff out of some of their youngsters. It's just kind of what it is. But then you look at the Rays, and I never tune out the Rays on anything, is they just somehow find a way to get the best out of every baseball person they put in a jersey down there. And then, like you mentioned, the Orioles are finding ways to do it. They're only going to be as good as their youth takes them, but they did make a couple of good moves with Corbin Burns and some of these other guys that are going to help them get over that hurdle that they faced last year when they got knocked out of the playoffs too, just like we did.
Yeah. So, and they can't bring up everybody. They can't bring up every kid they've got, all the superstars they've got. They can't do it right now. They have too many guys making too much money. So they're in a conundrum where, you know, does the youth movement start to take over so much that they lose that? And, you know, it's just the Wild West. They're going in and winning games 10-0, but also losing a lot of them at the same level because they're 18 to 20 year old kids, you know. So it's a catch 22 on that. But, you know, like I said,
like they're bringing up my rookie outfielder from my fantasy baseball minor league retention draft and Colton Cowser.
That's an all name team.
Double C. Yep. Colton Cowser. But to your point, I think the youth movement's on, and they're going to ride or die by their talented youth and see what happens, I think, this year. But there's a lot that can happen there in that, too.
One of the things that I like about what we'll potentially have for the Jays is we're not riding a youth movement per se. We're riding Lukes, and we're riding Ernie Clement. Like, guys who've been – yeah, and they've been in it, man. Like, I mean, those guys have been in – they've been in the mud up to their knees playing in, you know – where Rochester, Tuscaloosa, or, you know, like they've been wherever, and they're seasoned, where these kids are coming right out of college. They've had nothing but the best, you know, the LSU and Vandy and all this stuff where, like, I mean, the facilities are unbelievable. And yet, you know, you've got Ernie Clement that 3 years ago was playing for the Mud Hens or some, you know, something like that. Like, I mean, it's just what it is. And so I'd take gristled, you know, middle guys over young guys any day of the week. And I really do feel like Lukes and Ernie Clement are going to put their stamp on this team this year. And at the end of this year, you know, in October, we're going to be talking about how impressive they were.
I have a good comp for you on those guys. After I make one other point here. So the Orioles, like you said, you mentioned the Jackson Holidays and all these guys that have had nothing but the best of the best of the best for baseball to offer them through their, you know, minor leagues and college experiences and stuff like that. Do you think any of them have experienced a drought or a slump? You saw, like, what we saw Bo Bichette deal with that really early in his career, right? Then Vladdy had it. And then obviously Biggio is just hoping to get out of it. You know,
no, none of those guys
are those guys going to be able to handle that as much as anything
no,
else?
No, what we're talking about, and this is the hard part for baseball players. When you come out of playing, you know, little league or whatever, your consideration is up to a certain point. So then you go to college. You go to college and you're the best. I mean, if you go to a JUCO and you fight your way up and you do a bunch of other stuff, different story. But I mean, these guys that are getting drafted and coming into the majors, you know, at 19 and 20 and 21 years old, they haven't had a slump because they're better than everyone else. And even if they start to feel like they're having a slump, their coaches just play them until the wheels fall off. Like, I mean, what's a college schedule? 25 games, 30 games? Like, it doesn't even give you opportunity to. And you're using an aluminum bat, first of all. So how? I mean, you hit a foul ball, or you
I don't think Jackson Holliday has a problem with a wooden bat.
No, he doesn't. But
that's besides the point.
It's one of those things where they've been so much higher than the standard. And, you know, especially
but now the LSU catching back up.
Yeah. When you hit the majors, because
you're going to face the best of the best. Yep. You're going to face, like, the best of the best that baseball has to offer
every night. Whereas, you know, go and play Ole Miss and, you know, they throw their fourth pitcher at you. I mean, you're going to launch 15 into the cheapies. I mean, it's going to happen. But, you know, if you go, you know, if your road trip is, you know, Tampa, Boston, New York, I mean, you're going to face five or six really good major league arms. And
he could go facing, like we were talking about, Taj Bradley in one series to go into face Garrett Cole in the next, and then Corbin Burns and so on and so forth, whoever it ends up being. But that's the tenure. You're going to get Gausman, Bassett, and Barrios at it at some point. Good luck. It'll be interesting, but that's what baseball's for, Jason. So, yep. But indeed, I do have that comp for you. You mentioned Nathan Lukes, and you mentioned Ernie Clement. If this team ends up being anything a realm of World Series level, right? This is the 1992 Blue Jays team to me right now, and you have those guys are the guys riding the trenches. You remember those old documentaries that they basically said Ed Sprague was riding the trenches, Derek Bell was riding the trenches, Manuel Lee was riding the trenches. You don't go to the benches, we go to the trenches.
Yep.
Right. Ernie Clement and Nathan Lukes are both in that ballpark of that form of a guy to me. The Reed Johnson player, that, you know, per the Angry Bird behind me. Yep. That guy that's just gritty, gonna get the things done, gonna help this team in some fashion, regardless of the fact that they play half the time. You know what I mean? Whatever it is. I think those two are on this team. I really am, with their springs, with what how little options they have in as a none, I don't see how they don't make this team.
Yeah, and I think that Biggio is starting to get into that wheelhouse. Like, I think Biggio is starting to get a bit of gristle on the, you know, on the thistle, and I think that he's starting to prove to some people that you know, maybe he's a little bit more frightening than we all were led to believe. You know, I think if he's on any other team, he's probably starting for them. And you know, he's a good player. He's gonna get his this year if they let him play. Yes. And I feel like Kiermaier fits into that a little bit. He's a little pretty though. He's got those baby blues, and him and Springer have good tans and good hair, and where Biggio's got that terrible beard, and Ernie Clement's hair is awful. He looks like he brushed it with a pork chop.
He's from around here where I'm at, with Rochester, New York. He grew up one town over.
Yeah.
But to that point, there's something to that. And I think right now, I don't know if you can afford to lose Nathan Lukes when he's out of options, because let's just say he is on the bench this year, right? And he proves himself very, very good. The Blue Jays have still jack and shit for outfield depth in the minor league. So let's say we are looking at next year's offseason. Are you going to bring Kevin Kiermaier back again if he has a year at the age he's at? I'd almost rather just put Nathan Lukes out there.
I would.
He can do just what you know what I mean? It's just as much of that part of the decision right now, because he is at risk if they let him go and try to push him to Buffalo to start this Major League Baseball season on. That's somebody like the fucking Tampa Bay Rays. They're going to go, ooh, I like him, and cherry pick.
Yeah.
And then he's going to be playing every day in the Tampa Bay Rays outfield, and he's going to destroy us.
I mean, I think what we're starting to see, especially with those guys, which is great, is I think we're starting to see them challenge for that spot. Like, I think Lukes, Robertson, and Clement are all challenging for their spots right now. And I mean, you're going to see probably more competition, and I like it. I keep them up. I like, with an older outfield like that, keep them up, let them play. Like, if Springer misses 20 games this year because he's load managing, fine. I mean, to get a healthy, you know, to get George Springer as your best leadoff hitter in the game going into September and October, that's much better than having him tired and dragging ass and, you know, and I think we all saw that with 2 years ago, especially with Springer, with, you know, with the fear, they were gassed. So, I mean, if you've got the availability of a couple, and you know, now we've got Barger, who's starting to show himself to be a pretty good outfielder. And so we've got some choice, you know, we've got some guys that can fill. Let's just make sure that we don't get overly, you know, like, I feel like we've been overly enamored with, like, 3 years ago, it was, Vladdy's hitting home runs, he can't sit out. Oh, you know, Bo's hitting this well, he can't sit out. You know, Springer's hitting this well, he can't sit out. Well, yeah, he can, and they should. I mean,
if you have somebody like Lukes in the outfield that can spell one of those guys out as your fourth outfielder, you know, okay, great.
And it's not a drop. A day off, it's no longer a drop.
The center and whatever.
It's no longer a drop to go to Nathan Lukes. He's same.
Correct. Yeah.
In fact, he might be better.
He's a salvageable fourth outfielder and everything to that point. Yeah. So the funnier thing, I was just looking at our depth chart here, and it's like, okay, if let's say, you know, we know Jansen's not going to make the opening day roster. What do you do? Do you bring the Severin guy up? Or do you just say, okay, well, Varsho can catch in a backup spot, go for 4 or 5 days until you need the backup guy, and then IKF actually can, funny enough, be a catcher, because that's where he started with Rangers. Too.
Yeah,
he has been. So I'm honestly wondering if they're going to, like, take the first 4 or 5 days of the season, the first series or so, with no backup catcher because they have a couple of in a pinch to get through the remainder of a game. They have something to go, and then they can have an extra bat like Vogelbach or Votto or whoever on that line on that bench. You know, maybe that's the
by the way. Have you heard that Vogelbach's walk-up song is Milkshake?
Yes, I have.
Like, come on, man. Like, have a little bit more fun, will you, Vogelbach?
Like, he's been doing that since he was with the Mets.
The best.
So that's perfect.
The best.
It's a great one.
Yeah.
How can you not? Not to mention, it's got to give everybody a good chuckle and get him pumped up or get maybe he's hoping it lures him to a false sense of security or something when he's trotting up to the plate. Who knows? This is great. So on that literal note, I'm going to make the dad joke. Would you like to have some fun with our little end of the show fun here a little bit, Jason? Or is there anything you want to add before we go?
No, nothing. I mean, I think we've got, you know, we've got a couple of big weeks here before the season starts. And, you know, like we've threatened in the past, I think maybe we'll try and pop on a few more times as things get closer. And really, you know, like we see so many people coming in now more than we've ever seen during the lives. You know, if you're on Twitter, if you're on wherever, just reach out to us and get your voice heard on here. You know, it's easy and we love to see you guys popping in and out. And that's all I got.
Talk to us. I do have a tidbit though. If you happen to be, I just found this out and this is the infinite wisdom of Elon Musk and his idiots that run Twitter. If you are listening to us on Twitter during this live stream, some reason Twitter has killed the chats in live streams.
Oh,
head over to YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, wherever the else on our social media stuff. It's all the same tag at BirdWatchingGC. Come on over, listen to us, and you can join the actual conversation. We have the chat window up here. For some reason, Twitter and all their infinite wisdom of moving to X, they have killed the live stream chat unless you go into their stupid other things now at this point, and that just doesn't work with our platform right now, along with apparently everybody else's. And on that note, I keep forgetting, I usually say this at the top of the show, join us on the Friday night pack rips when I'm opening up baseball cards because we're going to give out a winner. We had a winner last week that didn't claim his prize. I'm going to reclaim this week as a double claim prize for somebody.
Well, it's a prize.
And you'll be able to double up. So, yeah, you're going to get a grand prize. I'm going to spin the wheel behind me over here, and I have baseball cards, Blue Jays coasters with our coasters, and I have a grand prize, which is a 3D printed light box for a Blue Jays LED kind of display. So, ready for you to go. So, join us, and the only way you can enter that contest is by following us on our TikTok channel because we're trying to get this live stream working over on TikTok, and we need 1,000 viewers and followers to do that. So please go over there, click that. If you are following the at Birdwatching GC count, you're automatically entered in. We're just gonna
tell your friends.
Do it.
You we need those TikTok follows. and I don't know if you've noticed this or not, Craig, but there's a weird card opening phenomenon going on right now. Like Luke Gajic, who is a NHL heavyweight, he's opening packs of cards on Hockey Night in Canada. Somebody else did it on one of the.
So we had Brian Parra on the show a couple of months ago for the mint cases. That was an awesome good time for you and I to be chit-chatting about baseball cards with him and just collecting baseball in general. He's really going to shake up that game in the very near future. I think his products go live in the next couple of weeks. So if you're looking for something fun, check out Mint Cases M1NT is how they spell it. So that's what the cool kids do. They put numbers where letters are.
You're darn right they do.
So speaking of cool kids, I couldn't find a baseball blooper I was happy watching with you tonight, Jason, and for this show. So I figured I'd go baseball movie again. And there's nothing better than going to the Sandlot, right? It's baseball season's almost over. And this is, in my opinion, have the option. But I'm sure you've seen this flick.
I mean, it's a classic. It's, you know, I don't think you're ever gonna, you know, as much as I love Major League and it's, you know, it's one of my favorite movies of all time, there's something about this movie that just, I mean, it addresses pretty much every part about being a kid, you know, where you spent all that time with your buddies out, you know, like, you know, whether in Canada it was playing road hockey or playing baseball or whatever, there's always the weirdo house in your neighborhood where you didn't want the puck or the ball to go. And I mean, it's just, it's so classic. It's unbelievable. And I mean, it's even created, you know, like it's created its own spin-offs of a whole bunch of stuff. Like They're killing me smalls, as you know, like, I mean, it's been in songs, it's been in other movies. It's a piece of classic cinema that, you know, I would encourage anyone who hasn't seen it, obviously, to go watch it. Well worth the watch. It's a great movie. Yep. And just, you know, realize that if you want to watch baseball movies, this and 42 are probably two of the most affectant ones that I watched. I happily watched 42 with my kids. They understood what was going on in that movie, and I feel like it helped them out a lot. This one's just fun. Yeah. This is just a fun
their faces are priceless. Yeah, and to your point, 42 is a great baseball movie, but we'll have to do this again sometime, as we did this about 5 years ago, right when we started the podcast in the off season. We did a movie countdown with a bunch of top baseball movie freaking countdown lists that I maltopped into a freaking our own little cockdown. So, but Bull Durham's always one of my favorites too. But this one is just, there's just something to it. It's just, I don't know if it's because it's the kids, the love of the game kind of level stuff, but this part where he steals Babe Ruth's baseball signed autograph ball from his stepdad, and he didn't know who Babe Ruth was. He just met all these kids in the neighborhood when he moved there. And he goes, wait, those are all the same people for the King of Crash, the Great Babe, you know, just them rifling through the bajillion nicknames that obviously the great Babe Ruth had. And it's just hysterical to the point.
Yeah, it's a really, really well done movie. And I mean, I think it speaks to a lot of kids who, you know, who move into neighborhoods or, you know, take on new sports or go to new schools and all kinds of fun stuff like, yeah. Just all of it, cool, everything. Yeah, just, it's awesome.
And then the fact that the end of the movie has one of the best baseball speeches of all time, with once again James Earl Jones as the blind gentleman that owns the house where the ball went into with the beast.
Yeah.
Why didn't you boys just come over and knock? I would have let you.
Awesome.
Because they get to a point here where they're going to go on a quest here, obviously, to get the ball back and everything. And it's like literally everything down to them using erector sets and things like that.
Great.
It is just perfect baseballisms at the Sandlot. And like I said, I cannot say enough good fun things about that movie, as obviously you can. But I think the quote I was talking about at the end of the movie, as far as my favorite parts of that movie, The Sandlot, other than obviously that scene, James Earl Jones is talking to him about it, and he goes, George signed this, meaning Babe Ruth signed it, and he's holding the baseball, and he goes, I'm sorry to say, boy, but you're not dead. You're not, he's not going to kill you. You're dead where you stand.
Yeah.
Or something like that. Because, and then he does the coolest thing on the planet, because he's blind and he can't see half of it, you know, any of his baseball memorabilia. He gives him a Murderer's Row baseball signed by all the Yankees from the year with everybody on it. So, yeah,
pretty cool.
I just think it's funny that Dennis Leary would have killed him, just saying, if he didn't have that other ball. So, is there anything else you want to either add on that note, Jason, or anything?
No, that's it, buddy.
Good deal. So, Blue Jays fans, as I had mentioned, please make sure you join us on somewhere apparently outside of X from the new information that I found. The Twitterverse is no longer apparently the safe, wonderful barroom chat that it once used to be with being able to get onto our show. So, if you are one of the listeners that is over there this evening, please join us on YouTube, Twitter, or no, sorry, not Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, any of these places outside of that, and you'll be able to chit-chat with us every week. We pride ourselves, Jason and I and Ken, being the barroom chat for Blue Jays fans, so we want to have you here. If you want to direct message us or anything like that on Twitter, that's probably the easiest way to direct message us, because that's just how it is. We like having people on the show, so if you want to join us, please join us. We'll talk about, figure out a date where we can get you on the show, and you can join this wonderful barroom chat that we have. Next week, Jason, we got to make sure we can nail down the time, though, because our friend the Heck wants to join us again to have some talk. So he'll be on it with the show. So he's got those wonderful, weird quotes that he can always help us out with. And like, to the point, what was it he was saying? He was looking very much forward to the Alec Manoah revenge tour.
Yeah.
I think that coined that term to it. So to that point, we're going to have to get a wonderful tidbit from him on something else, because we're not going to get to see that to start the season.
Well, let's not start the season, but...
So we'll see him next week. But until then, Blue Jays fans, make sure you catch us on anywhere you can find us, any social media. Check us out for Friday Night Packs Rips. We'll be live on all platforms. But like I said, the TikTok one is where you get the follows, get that entry to the wheel here to win some gifts. And if you win something on the, and you're in the U.S. and Canada, I will make sure it gets sent out to you promptly. To that point, we have plenty of other things going on too, so make sure you just follow our social media and have fun with us, and we'll have some good stuff here with you on the show. And per usual and always, we'll end the show like we always do with two claps, a lick Ric Flair, and a let's go Blue Jays, and a la Caleb Joseph. So 1, 2, 3. Woo! Let's go Blue Jays.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.
Save big money now on new siding from LP Smart Side at Menards. Update and beautify your home with your choice of 13 timeless colors of pre-finished engineered siding. It's durable and includes a Sherwin-Williams factory finish paint warranty that means no painting for years to come. View our entire selection of siding from LP Smart Side today. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now. Save big money.